The only way we can keep people healthy, the only people we can keep them out of the hospital, the only way we can hopefully direct them to a good outcome is with novel sources of data.
Hello and welcome to another special HIM-16 edition of the Mobi Health News podcast. This is the second of three podcasts discussing a few important topics we believe should be top of mind for those working in digital health and attending the HIM-16 event in Vegas. I'm Brian Dolan, co-founder and editor-in-chief of Mobi Health News.
And I'm Jonah Comstock, managing editor. Today's topic is patient-generated health data, a deep dive into the trends of the moment and the nitty-gritty challenges of working with this kind of data.
But first, I'd like to thank our sponsor. This podcast, like all of our HIM-16 coverage, is brought to you by American Well, one of the country's leading telehealth providers. If you're attending HIM-16 in Vegas, be sure to stop by American Well's booth. It's number 2154.
Once again for this podcast, we spoke with a number of digital health luminaries about the topic at hand, including Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center Chief Information Officer John Halamka, Propeller Health Chief Operating Officer Chris Hoag, Mark Wagar, president of Heritage Medical Systems, a pioneer ACO, and a few other folks.
Before we hear from them, it might be helpful to lay out just what we mean when we say patient-generated health data. It's a broad term that one healthcare informaticist told me this week probably should be applied to just about all health data. More commonly, though, it might include anything from what patients write on a clipboard, in a waiting room, to blood glucose data a patient with diabetes might record in a journal at home.
But the patient-generated data we're most interested in for today's discussion is collected and shared digitally through consumer devices like Fitbit activity trackers or Withings blood pressure monitors, or through prescribed FDA-cleared devices like Propeller Health's sensor-laden inhalers.
Let's jump right in with a clip from Brad Crotty, who, among other things, is the director of patient portals at Beth Israel Deaconess.
The conversations really aren't about the technology anymore. We now have technology that helps connect record systems, that helps connect patients to those record systems and to clinicians. We're now past the meaningful use implementation stage, and now we're really getting into the conversation of how do we optimize our workflows and our care processes to make the most use of the tools that we have.
This was a thread we heard a lot in this conversation about patient-generated data. The technology is here. Now is the time when hospitals are figuring out exactly how to use it to best effect. John Halamka, Chief Information Officer at Beth Israel Deaconess, added that not only is the technology out there, but patients are craving it.
So today, 80% of all accesses of Beth Israel Deaconess websites and portals is done via mobile devices. The desktop is dead. It is the expectation of our patients that we are going to provide mobile information, mobile data flow that's bidirectional, that we are going to embrace the things they are using for all other aspects of their life, but that healthcare has been slow to embrace. So mobile is the future. There will be some policies to be written and education to be done, but I have no doubt that as we look at the healthcare of the next 5 years, you are going to be using your iPhone or Android device to interact with your doctor and not so much the phone, the fax machine, or driving to the office.
In talking about trends that are leading to increased adoption of patient-generated health data, one thing that came up over and over again was the effect of new value-based payment models. Here's John Halamka with a quote from the top of the podcast.
Because of the change over the last year in payment models, now accountable care organizations, doctors, and hospitals are looking to figure out how we can start getting alternative kinds of data, richer data about the patient experience. And the only way we can keep people healthy, the only people we can keep them out of the hospital, the only way we can hopefully direct them to a good outcome is with novel sources of data. Hence this notion that we really actually need for the first time in order to be successful, we need to gather the data from consumer devices. We need to gather subjective data from patients about how they are doing. Is their wound healing? Is their mobility good? Is their pain reduced? So alignment of incentives is what has pushed us to now use this consumer source data.
Dr. Mark Wagar, president of Heritage Medical System in California, says using patient-generated health data is part and parcel of a proactive approach to health, something that's much easier in value-based care delivery models.
If you position physicians, physician organizations with the infrastructure to be able to be proactive, which is part of the key of our Medicare Advantage and prepaid business, and part of the key of the next gen business evolving to more payment in advance, you free up the physicians and other providers to do things more aggressively early. And that certainly opens the door for using much more digital technology, because we don't have to wait around for a billable event and fee for service. You know, we've got a body, a budget of money that payers or the government gives us. And if there's an opportunity for, you know, you're my mother, because she's able to use some digital technology and it helps us track or helps us for communicate and engage, you know, we can pursue that.
And this isn't just theoretical. Chris Hoag, COO of Propeller Health, says he's seen firsthand the dramatic effect new payment models have on enthusiasm for adoption of these new technologies.
But these things can happen very, very quickly. As one anecdote, we had a health plan that we had been talking to for quite a long time for a COPD program, and it was going but wasn't really moving very, very quickly. Then all of a sudden they got assessed with a $700,000 penalty because their readmission rates were quite high. Much, you know, they got the CMS reimbursement penalty for very high readmission. Instantly, we had a program going, because COPD is part of the bundle of readmission risk, and they were mandated to go try to find things that would help with their readmission rates.
So the technology is here, the payment models are here, but not evenly distributed yet, and the stage is set for real adoption of digital patient-generated data. But there are plenty of roadblocks along the way as well. Here's Hoag again.
I think earlier there was this perception that people would put a sensor or put some kind of monitor on a patient and it would just work. I think what we get into is the complexity around that. There are many, many steps from getting the patient's name to getting them, you know, censored and monitored, so you can analyze data and then get it back to the doctor in a compelling way. And each of those steps has to be thought of and optimized with a careful eye to the experience of the end user.
For one thing, there are challenges inherent in getting patients to consistently use remote monitoring devices, especially when you consider that the patients who benefit most from remote monitoring are often older patients who can be less experienced with technology.
A seemingly universal challenge for those deploying digital health programs is translating adoption into sustained engagement. It's been true for consumer fitness device companies, and it's true for digital healthcare programs rolled out to patients through their providers too. Here's Hoag again.
What we found is that there's a lot of novelty when you start tracking something that you've never seen before, whether it's steps or your rescue inhaler use or your mood, but that novelty wears off. And I think we see that across the board in both wellness and clinical apps. And so now there's a lot of focus around how to keep an experience engaging when most people on a day-to-day or week-to-week basis really aren't that interesting. There's not a lot of variability in a person, in their patterns. You might be more active on one day than the other, but week over week, there's not a ton of variability. So if you're just looking at a dashboard, these dashboards become quite uninteresting over time, and I think that's why we see a lot of attrition from these products. And so now there's a bigger focus on how to create a compelling experience that is persistent. And a lot of that comes from being smarter. So again, how do we bring in more different data sources and data elements to give more complex, richer, more interesting insights, maybe a little bit, you know, much deeper than just a trend line on a dashboard. And so I think we're kind of getting into that phase where there's a bit more complexity, a bit more sophistication, and maybe even a bit more elegance in the user experiences.
At Beth Israel Deaconess, there are also concerns about making sure doctors and patients are on the same page about patient-generated data. They've introduced a set of guidelines that lay out the accuracy of different kinds of data and their policies on how to use it. But they're also setting up support infrastructure in case patients have technical problems. Here's Halamka.
We are hiring a full-time person whose role it will be to support patient-related requests around patient-generated healthcare data. And so if a 70-year-old person is unable to somehow get their blood pressure measurements from their phone to their doctor, who are they going to call? And that's why we have to create the support infrastructure, the processes and people to ensure that this rollout is successful.
Once usability and setup concerns are figured out, you've still got to determine how to draw insights out of that data and deliver those to busy doctors in a way that they can work with. Here's Chris Hoag laying out that progression.
I think we spent so much time thinking about just collecting the data because it hadn't been collected before. So then you start to collect it, and then you get to the next step of the problem, which is, wow, this has to actually work in somebody's daily life, in their workflow, or in if it's a patient in their kind of general daily patterns. And so now you get to the next level of issues that have to be solved. And I think that's where we're at now, which is we can now effectively generate the data, but it doesn't, the data by itself doesn't really do anything. And so now the focus is on how to abstract that and get, you know, more insight out of it so that it's actually useful.
For many, the current focus now is refining predictive analytics to help providers and patients make better use of patient-generated health data.
Right now we have a study going on where we have a rule that predicts exacerbation based on rescue inhaler use and a few other factors. So we can look at the pattern for a user and then look at the deviations of over that pattern of rescue use, so they're increasing. The system that we're working with, you know, the health plan that we're working with, then gives us feedback. So we'll send an alert. We think this patient is declining. They will intervene, go and talk to the patient, and then they feed back the information to us about whether it was a true positive or a false alert. And that helps us very much, because then we can iterate on the rule and start to generate more and more data. And so over time, that rule that we're using to generate this alert becomes better and stronger with higher fidelity.
But simpler interventions can use human judgment in place of an iterative algorithm and still derive a benefit. Here's Naomi Fried, former Chief Innovation Officer of Boston Children's Hospital, talking about a monitoring program they undertook while she was there.
An example of a project that we did at Boston Children's Hospital to get information about the patient back to the clinicians when they needed was actually focused on patients after they've been discharged from the hospital. We built a program called DISCO, which is short for discharge communication, in which we sent text messages out to our patients after they'd left the hospital to ask them a couple quick but very important questions, like have they got their medications filled, do they have any questions, are they having any problems. That information then came back into a dashboard that the nurse could look at, and very quickly she could see which patients needed support, needed to talk to her, and then she could make an outbound call to the patients that had questions or didn't have their medications filled.
Although all the pieces are falling into place for patient-generated data right now, in many ways we're still just at the beginning of what this trend might bring. Halamka thinks it will change the way doctors think about their jobs.
Clinicians shouldn't ideally be data entry clerks. Computers should do that for us. So if you tell a clinician, well, hey, I'm going to take the work of the day, I'm going to spread it across a team of people, I'm going to build automation that's value-added so you are not a transcriptionist, you are not a data entry clerk, they'll actually be overjoyed. So in effect, it allows the clinician to do the things clinicians are good at. And over the last couple of years, I think we've seen a lot of physician burnout because they've actually been doing things that are probably not the best use of their time.
And Hoag is excited about the possible insights to be gained when we can compare the output from a diverse range of patient data streams.
The value really comes from layering different sources of data on top of each other. Generally, one stream of data from one device or one metric isn't that valuable. It's when you start layering in multiple different data streams on that same individual that things become very, very rich. And so for us, we're collecting a passive baseline of sensor data about how a user is using their medications. On top of that, we layer contextual information. So every time we get a rescue use, we're pulling in additional information about that person's environment, the weather, the air quality, the temperature, et cetera, so we can start to really understand that individual's patterns. Additionally, we ask questions of users. I'm a big believer in the value of both qualitative and quantitative data layered on top of each other.
Finally, we asked a few of our guests to talk about what they thought patient-generated health data would look like in 5 years. We'll leave you with Dr. Lomka's version of the future of patient-generated health data.
So imagine that the healthcare delivery process in the future, instead of saying, you have to identify you have a problem, you then call your doctor, and your doctor then tells you, oh, I have an appointment available in 6 weeks. And then, you know, you see the doctor, you refer to a specialist, you know, months go by. Imagine reducing the cycle time to the, we are monitoring salient physiological data for conditions that you have had in the past. So weight, blood pressure, pulse, pulse oximetry, or in the case of, say, using an inhaler, FEV1, the idea of how much can you expire so that we can see if you're having an asthma exacerbation, or even sleep apnea, movement for certain kinds of diseases like multiple sclerosis or cardiovascular disease. And then we identify variants. We then arrange a telemedicine visit, and that is we are doing a FaceTime session with you, not 6 weeks from now, but that day, changing the doses of your medication, arranging for follow-up, scheduling proactively the services you need to keep you healthy. And so what we see is that this is going to take, you know, a year or two, but this convergence of factors, the technology, the economic need to do it, patient expectation, is suddenly leading us to think of complete revisions in the way we deliver care to reduce costs and improve quality.
That seems like a good note to end on. Hopefully, we'll see some hints of patient-generated health data's bright future in the HIMSS exhibit hall next week.
We're shipping off to Vegas this weekend, and we're looking forward to meeting some of our readers and listeners around the show floor.
If you're heading to HIMSS 16, be sure to stop by booth number 2154 to meet this podcast sponsor, telehealth company American Well. That's booth number 2154. And after the event, be on the lookout for the next episode of the Mobi Health News Podcast, our post-HIMSS wrap-up show. This is Brian Dolan.
And I'm Jonah Comstock. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you at the big show.